Before we start the show, I'd like to talk to you about Brandwatch, which is a digital consumer intelligence company. It helps businesses better understand their consumers and buyers with clever software that enables them to analyze conversations from across the web and social media. To find out more, visit brandwatch.com and you can sign up for up-to-the-minute consumer insights in your inbox each week at brandwatch.com/bulletin. And it's worth mentioning that my business, Automated Creative, uses Brandwatch every single day, and our business would be impossible to deliver without it. So it's of real pride that I welcome them as partners for this week's episode. Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object Podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, and this is a weekly show about the future of marketing. Every week or so, I have the pleasure and the privilege of interviewing one of our leaders and one of our industry's leaders, I should say. And this week is no different. I'm on a call with Victor Neberhoy, who is the CMO and co-founder of Free Trade. So Victor, can you give the audience a very quick overview of who you are, what you do, and how you got there?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me on, Tom. Really appreciate it. So by the way, you pronounce my surname surprisingly well. I'm originally from Hungary. That was really spot on Hungarian pronunciation. That's where I grew up. And in 2004, something really good happened to us, which is we joined the EU, right? That was around the time I graduated at university. And suddenly the world opened up and I was able to go to either the United Kingdom, Sweden or Ireland to work without any like work permit or whatnot. And as it happens, a relatively lesser known tech company, at least by European, from a European perspective, a smallish tech company called Google opened their offices in Europe for the first time in Dublin. All my peers from the university, they wanted to work in banking and I wanted to work on the internet, on tech. I had some 10 interviews and I joined Google and I spent 7 years there and I really enjoyed my time there. Got to spend time in California, India, and all these places. But after 7 years, I felt that was my first job. I was still young. I was still hungry. I wanted to do other things. So I went and lived in Asia, in Hong Kong, which was really nice. I came back to Europe. I did an MBA. And then I ended up in London for personal reasons. My girlfriend, now fiance, she joined Google. She actually rejoined Google. She left for me and her next job was here in London. And so I ended up here. You have to walk the walk to support your partner as well. I was roaming the streets of London, jobless, and I saw a Crowdcube advertisement. And I thought to myself, that was great because you can invest any amount of money, even £10. You don't have to have your own like solicitor, your own deal flow. Basically, the platform takes care of everything. So I invested in the very first crowdfunding round of Monzo and Revolut, which both of them turned out to be great investments, but nothing is as big as my investment in Free Trade, which was my third investment that summer, in summer 2016. I saw the pitch and I had the same feeling again, like this has to exist. I wanted to open my ISA. When I arrived in the UK, I ended up with a suboptimal solution, £8 per transaction. So I was like, what can I do to make this happen? So I looked across my bank accounts in Ireland, Hong Kong. I pulled all the money I had at the time and I invested everything in Free Trade. Thankfully, my girlfriend remained employed at Google, so I didn't end up on the street. But that was how I got to know my co-founder, Adam Dotz, the CEO and founder of Free Trade. We got to talking after I invested and eventually I joined as his marketing guy because my background is there, originally search engine optimization and acquisition. So yeah, that's the story in a nutshell.
So if someone wanted to follow in your footsteps who was a student and wanted to get into the industry, what would be your advice to them?
Well, my advice would be to be to consider that in any system, you can basically only get as much out of the system as you put into it. So when I arrived at Google, I was really intense. You know, I came from Eastern Europe. Basically, there was no way back. I did not have much, you know, in terms of belongings. I basically packed a purple colored duffel bag when I moved to Ireland. I basically filled it up to maybe like half with my, you know, t-shirts and whatnot. My mentality was that I'm going to make it, I'm going to be the best they've ever seen. And I figured it out. I invested a lot into my own performance and I got a lot out of it. I progressed my career. Basically, it's your 20s and 30s when you can really develop your career, when you can make big jumps. When it comes to your 40s, where I am now, you know, the jumps are not quite as big and you just can't progress quite as well. So when you are young, that is the time to make make big moves. And I appreciate it's not for everyone. Some of my ex-colleagues from Google, at one point, they decided they didn't want to build a career. They are fine where they are. And that's also legitimate. Not everyone has to make it. You can have a complete happy life without being a CMO or anything like that. But if you want to follow my footsteps, it's all about being intense and proud about your own performance and invest as much as you can in your 20s and 30s.
And outside of that, what is your top marketing tip? What is the thing that you've learned in all of these different positions in your current role? What is the one bit of advice that has stood you in good stead that you pass on to others most often?
Yeah, there are a few there, but I'm going to prioritize for you, Tom. So, of course, every company is different. It all depends, right? We all know these generic truths. But once you have product market fit, it's amazing how much you can make out of referrals if you focus on that. And, you know, a good referral mechanic and building a channel that you fully own and not surrender to, you know, to the platforms that are Google and Facebook, where the whole planet advertises and tries to acquire customers. It's really important to figure out, you know, and then try to build, if you can, your own acquisition channel. That's what we did with Free Trade, the free share program, which works fantastically well. But underpinning that, something that's underappreciated often is the storytelling aspect of things. Everything is a story. We know that since that book, I think it's called Sapiens. If I got the name of the book right, I read it a long time ago. But basically, one of the tenets of the book is that everything is a story. And that's very true to your product and company as well. So underpinning all of that, you want to have a strong foundation of what your company is about, and you have to continue telling it over and over and over again.
This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Madfest. Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Madfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. So your shiny new object is crowdfunding. So I'd imagine most people listening to this podcast will know what crowdfunding is, but why is it your shiny new object? Why do you think it represents the future of the industry?
Well, the way society is going and the way the world is going, investing is becoming normalized. It's the insight we had a long time ago when we started our company that having an investment account is going to be as normal as having a bank account. And there is an underlying current of, you know, ownership and having equity in the businesses that whose products you use. If you consider companies like, let's say Nike, for example, they are extremely popular. Basically, the cash deal is ringing nonstop, people buying sneakers. If I buy sneakers or any kind of product from Nike, I want to benefit from that growth. I think that's only fair. And companies historically treated customers or users and shareholders as very different groups of people. We live in a world where information is extremely accessible. You can analyze a company. Some of the best company analysis I see is either on the Free Trade Forum or on Reddit. Information is very accessible, and it's time for people to benefit from the wealth creation that's happening in the world. And equally, crowdfunding that enables that, it's also a great tool for marketing. People that invest in your business, chances are that they become your biggest brand evangelists. That's why I would consider it our shiny new object, even though we've been doing it for a number of years. It bears repeating. It's a really great tactic.
And so tell me more about crowdfunding as marketing. How does that actually work for someone who's never attempted that before?
There are various platforms. We use Crowdcube always. They have the biggest community. So you raise money on these platforms, and people that pledge investment, they become shareholders of your company. So there is a lot that goes into that, but that's on the high level. And there are a lot of mechanics. They are still, retail investors, potential customers of your company. They are big on rewards. So tactics that you can use is giving away rewards for certain investment levels. Somebody who invests a grand, maybe they have free access to a feature they would have to pay for otherwise. And, it takes, for us, it typically takes a couple of hours or a day to raise money. Typically, it goes on for weeks or a month, and then it concludes, and then the platform collects the investment pledges for these investors, and it's in your bank account. So that's the high-level view.
And so what I'm trying to get to the bottom of is that what are the pitfalls here? What kind of business would this not work for?
That's a great question, Tom. So just like with every strategy, there is no one size fits all. So if you consider, let's say, a B2B company, let's say you produce, specialty chemicals for sunscreen. That is a very, it's an actual company I'm thinking of. It's on the stock exchange. That would be, it's always about storytelling. You can do things to get it closer to the customer with storytelling. But if you are a B2B business, that's not the strongest position to do crowdfunding from. I'm not saying you can't, and you should be as a marketer creative, but it's best suited for companies that are B2C and they have broader consumer appeal.
And so who do you think, maybe part of yourselves, is doing crowdfunding as marketing in a successful way? Who do you look up to in this space?
Yeah, actually, we are in this position, and it's a very interesting position to be in, because I've been here in the UK for 6 years, and I'm acquiring the traits of self-deprecating humor, and I think you guys don't like bragging, but internally we think about ourselves as one of the champions of crowdfunding. So it's really hard to find companies that we truly look up to, because for us, crowdfunding is such a foundational thing that we consider we are the category leaders of. But if I'm like hard pressed, I'm looking up to all the companies that made it, made it a success, and they have their own story, whether that's Monzo or Revolut or all these different businesses. They definitely helped improve this category, and they have their own success stories. We also think of crowdfunding, there is, a very strong marketing component, but equally for us, there is a strong fundraising component, because the way we structure things, a lot of our early fundraising came from crowdfunding, and that was by design, because, who else to benefit from the wealth creation that happens from a very early stage? And of course, when you consider investing at that stage or at any stage, you have to consider your risks, of course. A lot of wealth creation happens from that point where, the company is super early. And for us, it was very important that it's our crowdfunding, customer investors. For a lot of other companies, it's a smaller component of a bigger fundraising story. But there are lots of other companies that made this a success, and I guess it's a very lengthy way of saying that. Well, we are pretty good, Tom.
So why is it not more popular? I mean, it makes sense that you create the opportunity to buy into the brands that you buy yourself. But yet, you talk about Revolut, Monzo. We had the ex-CMO of Monzo on this podcast talking about the very topic a couple of years ago. But I'm not overwhelmed with other stories of other brands doing this. So why is there an inertia, or have I totally misread the market?
No, I don't think you misread the market, Tom. We are on a journey, right? And I think what we really need to achieve is that there are really positive financial outcomes coming from crowdfunding for this story to be whole. And I think we are getting there. Some of our early investors as part of our Series B fundraising with VCs earlier this year, they had the benefit of choosing whether they want to sell some of their shares. A few people took up that option. So we are getting there in terms of making crowdfunding really successful. I think we need even more success stories. And it takes a number of years, right? Building a company that's potentially up to 10 years of a journey to get there. So it's not really an instant gratification thing. I think the other thing is about crowdfunding. It's really important to disambiguate it from the likes of Kickstarter. There's a place for those products and all that, but I think the dominance of American media and American stories and companies, successes on Kickstarter. You probably remember the smartwatch Pebble, for example, that I actually pledged for and I was a user for while they existed. I think that has had a dominance over here, and I think it got maybe a little bit conflated. And like I said, we need more success stories coming out of crowdfunding, and it's going to take a number of years, but it's definitely going to be bigger.
Well, that's a lovely way to finish it, Victor. So if anyone wants to learn more about crowdfunding and wants to hear it from the horse's mouth, how would you like people to get in touch with you?
I prefer Twitter. My handle is V18N. I thought it would be a nice and short handle, but I always have to explain it a little bit. So I'm available on Twitter under that handle. And my email address is victor@fitri.io. That's Victor with a K, not with a C. So bring it on.
Thank you so much for an excellent interview.
Thanks a lot, Tom. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.